WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. During the Great Depression, about 250,000 teenagers left home and hit the road. Most were searching for work, some were searching for adventure. They hopped freight trains and often slept in hobo jungles, the hobo camps on the outskirts of towns. The new film, Riding the Rails, is about the teenagers who became hobos in the 30s. The film includes archival footage and interviews with former teenage hobos who are now in their 70s and 80s. We'll hear from two of them in the second half of the show. My first guest, Michael Ace, co-produced and co-directed the movie with Lexi Lovell. He got the idea for the film after reading a book called Boy and Girl Tramps of America, first published in 1934. The author, Thomas Minahan, disguised himself as a tramp and rode the rails across America, writing down the stories of teenagers he met.
I read the book and I was very moved by their interviews, by what these kids went through. It was a very difficult life, and from that, I wondered if there were maybe, if I could find maybe 20 survivors. So I might be able to have some subjects for a film. So I started writing letters to newspapers and magazines. And the editors really went for this story. And Modern Maturity was where we hit pay dirt. And that was...
it's a retirement magazine.
Exactly. I mean, that's read by 33 million senior citizens. So I started getting over 100 letters a day coming to my office, and it was just, it was amazing. And people were pouring their hearts out to me. They were basically saying, some of them said, I haven't spoken about this for 60 years. And occasionally I would get letters written in by hand that were 100 pages long.
Once you got so many letters, how did you go through them and decide who would actually be interviewed for your movie?
At that point, my partner Lexi Lovell, who's my wife, who couldn't be here today, she and I decided that we would make this film together, and we read all these beautiful moving letters, and sometimes people would, in fact, include a snapshot from the 1930s if they were lucky enough to have, you know, a brownie box camera at the time. And basically, we each telephoned 250 people. We came, you know, we had our 500 greatest hits. These were people with incredibly compelling stories, and you know, we talked to 500 of them, and then decided that there were 20 people who we really wanted to travel around the country and film. We went around. We did a road trip around the country, a 13,000-mile trip, where I basically got out a piece of string and figured out the most efficient way to visit them all. And we spent 2 months on the road visiting them. It was amazing.
There were about 250,000 teenagers on the road during the Depression, riding the rails, looking for work. It's an amazing statistic. Why were there so many?
You know, it's for many reasons. The devastation of the Depression is you know, poverty is the main reason. These kids, in some cases, they were told by their parents, like Clarence Lee, who's in the film, was told by his father that he had to leave. And it's not because, you know, his parents didn't love him. It was just that there were younger brothers and sisters who needed to be taken care of. And Clarence was 16, and that was considered big and old enough to go out and fend for yourself, which is what he had to do. So there were many reasons. I mean, some of these other kids left for adventure.
You mentioned in the movie that even a lot of schools were closed because they went bankrupt during the Depression.
First of all, the first thing that would happen is the teachers couldn't be paid because that school district didn't have any money left. They were bankrupt. They couldn't collect taxes. People didn't have anything. And the teachers oftentimes hung on for maybe a year or two or more without pay. And then eventually they couldn't do that anymore. And some schools closed, many schools closed. So that would really eliminate the option of staying in school. Although kids, they wanted to stay in school. This was not out of choice. And so that led to more kids being on the road.
What are a couple of the themes that emerged from all the people who sent you letters and who you interviewed?
The biggest themes that comes to mind is how these experiences as teenagers, as adolescents, really shape these people's lives. I mean, struggling like that as a teenager, it formed their values in many ways. And, you know, they did not want to ever be back on a freight train again. I mean, once they got a job, they would hang on to it for 42 years. I mean, the same job, because they didn't want to lose the security of having a job. And in many cases, they also wanted to give something back to society, whether it was working in a soup kitchen or in, say, John Fawcett's case, who's in the film. He became a civil rights worker, and he was a long time union man, and just wanted to give something back. And that was something that came up again and again and again, and it was really remarkable, because it was not necessarily something we expected when we set out on this film.
How dangerous was the experience for teenagers? Was there a lot of crime, mugging, murder in the hobo jungles and in the boxcars?
It was incredibly dangerous. I mean, there were a lot of criminals. I mean, these kids would get thrown into these hobo jungles where there was prostitution, there was rape, there was homosexual rape. I mean, there were all kinds of horrible things that happened to these kids. And, you know, oftentimes they regretted leaving home. About one out of three letters would talk about someone's legs getting cut off, about how someone falling underneath the wheels of a train. I mean, it was incredibly dangerous. So many kids didn't return from this, and it was unbelievable, the stories. I mean, we actually hop freight trains with one man who actually still does it in his 70s. And just that experience as a film crew was, I mean, I was thinking, why am I doing this? It's only a movie, as I was running towards a moving freight train. You know, your knees are like rubber. You know, it was one instance you're grabbing the rungs of a ladder, and the next instant, you know, you're lying on the tracks with one leg missing. I mean, it was very, very dangerous.
With so many young people and older people too out hopping the freight trains looking for work, traveling from state to state, some of the states tried to keep them out. You have a great archival clip from someone in New York basically saying, stay away, don't come. Let's hear that.
One of the very unfortunate things in connection with the Depression is the fact that so many people have left their homes to look for jobs in other places. My advice to all, everywhere, is not to come to New York. There aren't enough jobs here to go around, and it is very much better for all to remain in their own homes, with their own friends, and with those who can help them in their time of trouble and distress.
Michael Ace, who is the person we were just hearing? And where is this footage from?
That's Commissioner Hudson, I believe. And that is from a newsreel in the 1930s. I think it's Movie Tone News. I don't have it in front of me because we collected so many archives. But that was played to warn people that there were no jobs in the city, because the flow from the country to the city was equal to the flow from the city to the country. And people would just pass each other on freight trains going in either direction, you know, 250 to 500 people on a train going in the opposite direction looking for work. And so that clip was created to warn people against coming to the cities because there were no jobs. And basically what would happen is kids would end up on the streets, you know, shining shoes or selling newspapers or begging. I mean, or living in the subway. I mean, that happened a lot.
How did some of the other states try to keep people out?
Well, I mean, some were particularly bad. I mean, the stories we heard from Texas, Weatherford, Texas had an unofficial policy of basically, if a kid came into town who needed medical help, they were just driven out to the outskirts of town and dumped on the highway. And it's this news would travel among the what they call the hobo jungles, where these kids and older hobos would sleep and trade information about what towns to avoid, what railroad bull was particularly harsh, and don't go near Cheyenne, Wyoming, because there was a school for railroad detectives there, for instance.
Your film describes what California briefly did to keep vagrants out.
What happened was the Los Angeles police were so alarmed at the number of transients coming into their city that they actually blockaded the California border, not the Los Angeles border. They stopped people from coming in at the California border. So these teenagers were among the hobos and transients who were physically turned away. And, you know, they said if they didn't have something, I think it was $100, they were supposed to have $100, which was a fortune. Otherwise, they were turned away at the border. And this went on for, in 1936, it lasted for about 6 weeks before, you know, there was public outrage over it, and it was stopped. But the fact that they got that far, you know, showed you how desperate people were to keep other transients out of their cities, people who might be taking away jobs or people who they felt were dangerous. I mean, the country was really, really on the edge of revolution, and people were so afraid of what might happen that things like this happened, and we heard about these kids being turned away.
And this is what the Woody Guthrie song Do Re Mi is about. If you ain't got the Do Re Mi, about how they turn you away if you don't have the Do Re Mi in your pocket.
Exactly.
A lot of the teenagers who rode the freight trains were looking for work, and many of them couldn't find it and had to panhandle or beg for money. What were some of the techniques that you came across and some of the things that teenagers were forced to do in order to get enough money for some food?
Well, I mean, they were pretty inventive. I mean, there were kids who, there were techniques they had. They would go to a house and they'd see, you know, they'd study the laundry in the backyard, and they'd see if there were kids' clothes out there, if there was a man's clothes out there, and they'd say, well, that would be a better house because they've got kids and you know, they'll have sympathy on us. And so they would knock on the back door of that house. There were also these marks that you'd hear about in the hobo jungles where a house might be marked as a good place for a handout. So that woman would be more likely to give you something, and they'd steal too. I mean, that was one of the things they resorted to. We heard a story about a group of about 200 people coming off a freight train. They were all hungry, and they basically looted the grocery store in town. They just overran it and left on the next freight train. I mean, these were desperate times, and people did desperate things, and sometimes they did have to resort to crime.
My guest is Michael Ace. His new documentary, Riding the Rails, is about teenaged hobos during the Depression. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Michael Ace, is the co-director and co-producer of the new documentary, Riding the Rails, about teenaged hobos during the Depression. These teenagers faced a catch-22. They were thrown off the trains for riding illegally. Then they were thrown out of towns for violating vagrancy laws. You mentioned the laws were often tougher on teenagers because the authorities really wanted to discourage teens from traveling around and riding the rails.
The logic was that if you were tougher on a teenager, that would make him go home sooner. That if you gave him just one meal, rather than if you were an adult, you might get three meals. You know, that they were trying to really encourage teenagers to go back home, and particularly girls who were on the rails. I mean, that was considered, I mean, it was considered shocking even back then. And so girls would disguise themselves as boys. They'd put a cap on, they'd wear overalls. This we heard about again and again. So they did not want to be counted. They did not want to be found by the authorities. You know, they didn't want to go back, but the authorities really, really wanted to send them back more than anything.
A little later, we're going to be hearing from a woman who you interviewed for your movie, who's featured in your movie, and she rode the rails as a teenager. Did you find a lot of women who were on the road like that in the 30s during the Depression?
Well, we didn't get that many responses from women, but we did hear from men who were out on the road that there were about 10% of them were women, and in many cases they might be with their husbands or something, but there were girls on the road, and sometimes there'd be a group of them. But one of the reasons it was interesting, my partner Lexi was actually on the phone with a woman who we wanted to interview, and asked her why so few women had responded. And she said, you know, honey, the shame of being on the road is something that we really, really don't want people to know about, even today. And it was considered shameful, and particularly for a woman, because, you know, a woman was supposed to get married and have her husband take care of her, and to start life out on the road was not particularly auspicious beginning for a woman. They didn't want to talk about it oftentimes.
Did you find that the experiences of African-American teenagers who were riding the rails was different from white teenagers in the 30s?
Definitely. It was definitely more difficult. I mean, there were so many more odds that they were against, that they faced. For instance, even the most menial jobs that were taken, that normally African-Americans were given in those days, like elevator operators or shining shoes, were taken by white kids. And so it was even more difficult when they left their local areas. Clarence Lee, who talks about it, Clarence tells a horrific story about the racism out there and how he was nearly lynched. It was a case of mistaken identity, but it was a lot more difficult. I mean, that was a general impression.
I'm wondering if the boxcars were integrated. I mean, it was illegal to be in them in the first place, so certainly laws of segregation wouldn't apply, since no law applied.
Well, I mean, we heard lots of different accounts. I mean, one very interesting account we heard was a group of kids on a boxcar integrated at that time. They got off in the hobo jungle. The hobo jungle was not integrated. Hmm. So, I mean, they went their separate ways when they got off the train. On the train, I guess out of necessity, they traveled together. But we heard lots of different things. And then we'd hear things about boxcars, people really keep different races keeping to themselves. And then you'd hear the opposite, that they were all in the same boat.
I wonder what impact the stories of teenagers on the road in the 30s had on you and about your thinking about your life.
Well, it's really amazing. I mean, first of all, the people that we met, they become heroes to us, and they're so dynamic. I mean, in a funny way, it was like meeting old friends when we went out there, because we had spoken to them on the telephone, and it's in another sense, and we'd spent so much time with their stories that it felt like getting, 20 grandparents, and we become very close to our subjects and after meeting them and interviewing them, but not really spending that much time with them. And it just, in some ways, meeting them made us feel less afraid of getting old or something, because they're so dynamic. And then in terms of people being what it was like for teenagers, I mean, part of the reason we made this film was because, we've saw what was going on with, people on the streets today, and other documentaries like Streetwise, for instance, which have covered the subject nowadays. And we saw just how sort of history repeats itself, and we became just fascinated with what it would be like to be a kid back in the 30s. I mean, it was really, really amazing. We've continued to learn about it on this project.
When you were riding the rails as research for your movie, did you find people who were riding it for other reasons? Are there still people riding the freight?
There are still people riding the rails. What happened when we rode up and down California to Klamath Falls, Oregon, and the people we saw on that trip were Mexican migrant workers who were riding to pick lettuce. It's grapes of wrath stuff. I mean, it hasn't changed. There were not 200 people on a freight train. There were maybe five. There were also some sort of drifters who you'd see, some pretty scary types who would linger in the bushes and ride the freight. So there are still people doing it, but not too many. I mean, the one guy who does it in our film, I mean, he's now doing it for adrenaline. He did it out of necessity in the 30s to help feed his family, but now it kind of got into his blood, so he just does it. He's got a home and everything. He does it for kicks.
You got thousands of letters from senior citizens who rode the rails as teenagers. 10 people are actually interviewed in your movie. What did you do with the rest of the letters?
Well, what's happening with the rest of the letters is that because there were so many moving stories that we couldn't include, we're doing a companion book to the film, and that's actually being written by my father, Errol Lincoln Ace, and that is going to be coming out in the spring, and it's sort of a Studs Terkel treatment of all the letters, and really following the film. It includes the people who are in the film, but it also includes these other stories and more details, and we're just very glad that they can somehow be included, because film is just a very different medium, and you can't really get to know more than 7 or 10 people in a film.
Michael Ace, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your movie, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Michael Ace is the co-director and co-producer of the new documentary Riding the Rails. It opens September 5th in Los Angeles and September 12th in New York, where it will share the bill with Wild Boys of the Road. Riding the Rails will open in other cities around the country over the next couple of months. Here's an excerpt of the film in which Peggy DeHart, formerly Peggy Eaton, reads a letter home that she wrote in the 30s. She's one of the former teenage hobos we'll meet in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.